I always saw myself as Betty's scribe. I was documenting Betty's contributions to history so that they wouldn't be lost. So the YouTube clip, the audio podcast, the memoir, Sheila in the documentary and getting a lot of interviews with her, it was all about corroborating the chronology. And I was always looking for secondary sources. So Betty said this happened, and then there'd be something else. So it was a contemporary, or it was another photograph, or it was a book where someone referenced that happening, or the New York Times covered it. Anything I could, and collect it all with the idea of making it all digital and put it all online, which is what I did. So one day I'm at the office, Betty's apartment, and there was a file cabinet on the desk, like between our two computers. So it's this long desk that runs along the wall in her bedroom with two computer stations and the file cabinet in the middle. And I open up the file cabinet. I think I was looking for a tax document or something. And I see a folder, a file folder, and it says sex conference. So you know I'm pulling it out. So I pull it out. And on the front of it, it had a photographer's stamp. And it said Betty Lane with her address and her phone number. And then I open it up and I see pictures of Betty at the Now conference. And I just leaf through them quickly. And I see her giving a lecture and I see her with a vibrator in her hand. And I'm going, oh my God. I always wanted to establish that Betty was the one who reintroduced the electric vibrator as a pleasure device. And the history will say feminists did it, right? With a nameless, faceless. There's always a person behind everything. And it was Betty. Of course it was. I mean, she'd been using vibrators since they fit over your hand and they were being used for men for scalp massagers, right? And Grant brought it home and then she ran with it. So I look over at Betty. I'm like, Betty, here it is. Here's the missing piece. And very cavalier, she goes, oh, yeah. Those pictures have been in the cabinet for a minute. Sorry, you know, I'm just so busy. And I'm just like, Betty, what are you talking about? And that's how it was. There were always all of these kind of little diamonds hidden, these little gems in Betty's apartment. And I was always trying to find them. So I said, okay, it's almost cocktail time, which we called clittails. Betty would do anything if I made her a clittail, and that's how I would get her to talk. So it was fresh squeezed grapefruit juice and vodka over ice. So I'm like, I'm going to call Betty, see if she is alive and if the number is still, you know, active. Set up an appointment. We have to license these quickly. And then I'm going to sit you down and I want to hear all about it. I call Betty Lane and she answers on the second ring. And I can't believe it. And I tell her who I am and about Betty Dodson. And we set up a time to meet the following morning and come to her apartment. Same address, same phone number for what, 45 years now. Just like Betty, these old feminist war horses. I love them. So that's lockdown. And then Betty and I sit down for drinks and discussion. And I just pull out the first photo. And I'm like, okay, tell me about it. And it's Betty standing with her hands together and her arms up in the air. And she's smiling, like looking at the sky. And behind her, it's this Now Sexuality Conference. And it's a woman in the Vitruvian Woman pose. It's a take on the Vitruvian Man. And there's a woman with a video camera recording. If anyone knows what happened to that recording, I would love to have it for posterity. And all of these women sitting in chairs around her, and they're all smiling and looking at her. And I'm like, okay, what happened? What is this? Tell me. So Del Williams, who was the founder and owner of Eve's Garden, which was the first female-owned sex shop in the United States, and it was right on Park Avenue. So Del had taken a workshop with Betty and was so inspired that she opened the store. Betty ran the workshops and Del supplied the vibes. So Del was kind of into everything. I think her background was advertising. And she said, there's a sexuality conference. You have to go. And then together they put together the poster, The Vitruvian Woman. And under it is all the different lectures and workshops that would be happening over the weekend. And Betty loved it. And they pitched the women at Now and Ms. And they rejected the poster because they said that Betty had drawn the vulva with no hair. And they said it looked like a penis. I guess because maybe you could see a clit. I don't know. But it was rejected. I have all the mock-ups. And then I have all the prints, the original prints. And when I touch them, it's like touching history. And here's the visual on what Betty looked like during this conference. And it is so perfectly like 1973, the year I was born, by the way. She has a 5 points Vidal Sassoon haircut. She's wearing a halter top and wide leg bell-bottom jeans. And she looks fabulous. No bra. Right? I go to the next photo, and there's Betty standing at the podium, giving whatever speech she did, and then she's looking to her side, and seated on the dais is Sheila. How wonderful, right? You know, now I know the two of them at the conference, their partnership, they're running the workshops, and now they're giving their lecture. And I just asked, I'm like, well, what were you talking about? What was your lecture? She goes, oh, well, we wanted to call it the Split Beaver Slideshow for Feminists, but they thought it was a little too much. And if you don't know, at the time in pornography, if you had a woman open up her legs, they called it Split Beaver. And it was too pornographic. So Betty renamed it her Cunt Slideshow. This is a famous moment. So Betty had taken photos of all of her girlfriend's vulvas. And to document the diversity and show women that there's a range and heal the genital shame and there's something wrong with me. And I don't have a benchmark for what average genitals look like, right? An average vulva. And she said, I'll never forget it because when I started, there was a lot of tension in the room. And I said, well, here is my Art Deco cunt. And that's what Betty had done. She put architectural styles on each picture as a way for people to make an association. And it was really sticky until still today, people love it. And she went through about 4 slides and a group of women stood up and they had kind of an ambassador and they said, hey, we object to you using that word cunt. It's used by men to put us down. And then there's silence. And Betty says, I didn't even think about what I was going to say. And it just came out. She said, well, I'm sorry, but the term cunt happens to turn me on and I'm going to use it. And she continued through the slideshow saying cunt for each picture. And when she ended, she got a standing ovation. Betty could just take something back so easily and artfully. And, you know, that's the basis of our work. When I think about the future, fast forward to our Tracon episode or Goop, and we'll talk about that later on, you know, seeing images of vulvas, it's like the foundation of her method and the way for women to liberate their sexuality. It's like the first step. So then I come to the next picture, and it's Betty on some kind of stage, and she's got some kind of vibrator. It looks like it was the Panabrator, I think. I don't know, but it looks kind of like a wand, but real old school. And she has it over her jeans, over her vulva area, and she's holding it. So she must have been showing them like how to use a vibrator. And I'm like, Betty, how did the vibes... Well, she goes, oh, well, Sheila and I, when we were packing up, we thought, well, you know, why don't we just bring a case of vibrators to the conference? And I love that. Like, yeah, you know, we're heading out on the road. Who knows? Maybe we can sell that case of vibrators. Like, who has just a case of vibrators sitting at their apartment? A woman that's running workshops, teaching women how to connect to their orgasm. So I'm like, so, I'm tingling from head to toe because it's like, here I am establishing the ultimate feminist history. It isn't often that you can pull off a first or you can discover something so kind of central to a shift in culture and female sexuality. I mean, I felt like Kinsey. So then I get to the next photograph, and this one's great. It's Betty, and there's all these women seated in chairs all around her in like a big circle. And there has to be maybe like 75, 100 women, and Betty's in the middle, and she has her hand in the air with the vibe, and she's talking. And if you look at everyone's faces, they're all focused on Betty. And you can feel the warmth and the joy, the connection. It's like right there. Oh, I would have loved to be a fly on the wall. If anyone has the footage, please reach out. I would love to watch it. And then the coup d'etat. I get to the final photograph. And it's Betty leaning forward with a vibrator in one hand and a whole bunch of cash in the other, and she's selling the vibrator to a woman. And all the women are kind of clamoring around her, and they all want to buy a vibe. And I'm like, oh my God, here it is. This is the moment when you reintroduce the electric vibrator as a pleasure device in American culture. This is proof positive that it was Betty. I'm just over the moon. And Betty always ended any conversation about that conference with, well, it was the first and the last sexuality conference. A few years went by and someone sent me the audio recording of one of Betty's lectures, one of her talks. And oh, the energy and Betty's tone. That conference was, it was just a moment, a beautiful moment in time. And she was there. So the next morning, I get up and I head to Betty Lane's. And she lived downtown. And an okay building, but definitely one of those older rent control buildings. And remember, it was like this labyrinth of hallways. And I'm going down the hallway and I'm thinking, okay, I'm either going to get mugged or assaulted, or I'm going to license these photos because I can't put anything online. I'm dying. Like, all I want to do is take pictures of them and put them on Instagram and Facebook and then do a whole YouTube clip about it and an audio podcast. And I have to license these photos. So I knock on the door. I finally find the apartment and Betty Lane answers. And white-haired women, you know, just like Betty, same contemporary mid-80s. And she lets me in and she sits me down. And I look across in her apartment. All along the walls are these huge file cabinets stacked that go all the way to the ceiling. And I start asking, like, what are these all your photographs? And she said, yes. Betty Lane photographed the entire feminist movement. One woman. And because she put a stamp on everything, right, I'm there. And I remember she was sitting on the couch and she had a whole bunch of photographs of her family, like recent ones, kind of just taped on the wall. They didn't even make it to the frame, like they were that new. And candles lit, these little votive candles. And I just got the feeling that she was at the end of her life and she knew it. She wasn't sick, but there was just this real peaceful, low-key energy, transition energy. And we just talked. We talked about the conference. We talked about family. We just had such a nice visit. And I let her lead the conversation. And when it came to the photographs, I said, well, Betty, what do you want? How much money do you need? I have a check and I'll just write the amount. And she was so lovely. She's like, how about $500 and you have the rights to those photographs? That's like $100. a photograph. And I said, you got it. And she's like, can you make it out to cash? I said, of course I can. And I made out her check, and that really gave her a little charge. And I just thanked her. And I said, thank you for documenting our history. I got really emotional in the moment because, like Betty, you know, these two women, they sacrificed and they did something because they believed in it, not just because they were going to make a lot of money or get the ego stroke or be number one. They did it because it was right, and they did it so it wouldn't be lost. And when you're standing in front of courage like that and commitment, so I gave her a big hug and I left and I went to Betty's and we celebrated the photos and that we had them. And immediately I scanned everything and digitized everything. I had these big, beautiful 8.5 by 11 prints, 9 by 12 maybe. And I started putting them on social media, and then we could create content around it. And I saw the shift in Betty. It was interesting. I think when you're just living it so quickly and you're doing it as fast as you can, and there is no really acknowledgement or reward, I think you kind of lose your energy, or you just forget about it. You put it away. It's the past. And so for me to be able to come in with my energy and reinvigorate and run over to Betty Lane's and get this all done, I know it really kind of renewed her spirit. And it added a beautiful energy to everything that we were building together. You know, it's like knowing that someone's with you and you're both back to back together. And a few weeks later, we got the news that Betty Lane died. And all of those photographs went to Harvard's Arthur Schlesinger Library. And they're all online. And I'm just so grateful and moved. And it shifted the way I looked at my life. You know, it is short. And you have to decide where you want to put your time. You know, you can't do everything. You can't be everything. And at times I've questioned my sanity. It's like, why did I leave law? And right at the height of my career, you know, 30 to 45, right? Your prime earning years. And I took 15 years and I put it into this. And why? And sometimes you think like, well, I'm not motivated by money, but is that unusual and weird? Is there something wrong with me that I'm not going for ego or I'm not going for cash, and I'm spending all my time at this 80-year-old woman's apartment having beautiful transformative experiences, but nothing I can monetize, nothing that the outside world would say was valuable? And then I think of Betty Lane, right? And those cabinets of photographs and capturing history. And now that it's all digital and online and people can access them, how it shifts culture and shifts the way we see ourselves and our belief systems. You know, it starts with the mind. We are what we think. So feminism was real. Feminism accomplished big things. And I met three, Del Williams, we met, Betty Dodson and Betty Lane. I met them and I was able to take their work and bring it mass and catch those stories and share them here with you.